the genesis of this is 6, 8, 10 years old. You've been talking to Tandon a very long time about this piece.
Yes, that's right. It's been about 6 years since we first discussed that he was going to write this piece.
And when did you settle on the subject matter then?
Well, he settled on it because I really left that up to him. I didn't want to declare any parameters for him. So he decided on the subject matter probably about 3 years ago, because he's been doing the research for it for at least 2 years.
And did your ears pop up when you heard what the subject was going to be? Because it's pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Explain what it is.
Yeah, I had never heard of it before, and the premise of the piece is based on a women's secret language from this remote village in the Hunan province called Nushu. And it basically came into existence, or became popular in usage in the Song Dynasty. So it was about 1,000 years ago.
And there's one speaker left.
There is one teacher left. There was a very famous teacher in this village who passed away a few years ago, and now it's been left to, I believe it's a collection of these older women that are left, and they're teaching it to the young ladies.
And it's not spoken out. It was something that was written and hidden in clothing, a way mm-hmm. for women to communicate with women without either men or the man mm-hmm. finding out what they were talking about, right?
That's correct. It was mainly sung, so they would sing it. And, of course, I guess men, doing their daily chores or whatever, they were just like, oh, they're just singing about their stuff. You know, they don't really try to detect what they're singing about. And then, yes, it was basically kept hidden by weaving the calligraphy into articles of clothing. The calligraphy was painted into documents and the pleats of a fan. So it was very guarded because originally it was developed by a woman that was in one of the courts during that dynasty. And so she was taken from her family probably at the age of 12 or 13. And she was very homesick. So she developed some sort of intuitive code that her sisters might be able to decipher. And that's apparently how it got its start.
It's a little surprising that there isn't more concerto material for the harp. Lest we forget, and you know this well, but our audience may not necessarily know it well, 6.5 octave range, I mean, it's unmatched by any other instrument that's in common usage.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the myth is that it's not loud enough, but it would be loud if there were 20 of them, like there are violins. Was Tandon aware of the possibilities with this instrument before he took it on? Or did you have to sort of have, you know, harp 101 with him and tell him I can do anything, throw anything at me and I can probably do it?
No, he was very aware of the instrument because he had written for it in several of his symphonic works and miniature works. That's how I first got to know Tan. I was doing one of his more chamber type of works with him in Saratoga Springs. And he loves the sound of the harp, because it mimics the Chinese harp and also the guanzhang. So I think he was very familiar with the sound of it. Writing for it, I think he had some very small experience. But he had said to me, no, I've been wanting to write something for the harp. And he thought this would be the perfect premise because the calligraphy, in his opinion, the way it's written looks very feminine, and he thinks it sort of matches the feminine form of the harp.
And a lot of harp players, for reasons we don't know, tend to be female, right?
They do tend to be female in this country and in Western cultures, but not so much in Latin cultures.
Mm.
And so in Latin America, most of the harpists are men. And I think that for us seeing a lot of women playing the harp, it's just because a lot of women play in orchestras now with all instruments, not just the harp. So it just happened to be one of those instruments that was deemed acceptable for a young lady to possibly play in a major orchestra.
And the first female member of the Philadelphia Orchestra was a harpist as well, right? So there's a tradition there as well.
Yeah, exactly. That was Edna Phillips, and she was the first female in the Philadelphia Orchestra and has been an inspiration for me when it comes to commissioning works for the harp. And she was responsible for commissioning over 30 works for the harp, and including one of our biggest concertos, the Ginastera Harp Concerto.
A lot of the time, musicians will say, oh, it's wonderful to have a living composer because you can ask them stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in turn, composers will say, I hate when the musicians ask me stuff. What was your relationship with Tan Dunn as this progressed? Was he showing you stuff as it was happening, or did you one day receive a parcel in the post and go, here it is?
Well, I think Tan's creative force comes a little differently than most composers, because for him, he's usually preserving some piece of his culture and his music, so a lot of research is done first. And that's why I didn't know what the material would be for this particular concerto until he sort of found that out. And so for him, the creative process is him oftentimes filming things and documenting things, and that's exactly what he was doing. And he really gets the inspiration from those moments. And then he writes the music at the very end. So we had a draft, sort of like a sneak preview performance last year in Shanghai, just with the harp and the videos. So not quite fully baked, but was beautifully done because he was sort of the narrator that helped bring the missing pieces together. So we worked together feverishly. It was about a year ago. And he would give me basically manuscripts. He would send them via email, and I would like quickly print them out and see now what has he written. And so we were tweaking things. And so I think the fact that we actually worked together a year ago really assisted him in the writing process of developing the score completely, finding out what worked, what effects worked, what we could do to make it, you know, just a more dynamic piece and a dynamic role for the harp.
We've talked before about the challenges of playing this instrument, and it's something that maybe a lot of people don't think about, that when you are playing the harp in a symphony orchestra, you're using all of your limbs. Mm-hmm. You have to look at the strings, because it's not like a violin where you have four, you have significantly mm-hmm. more than four. You have to look at your music, which is in a grand form, because mm-hmm. of the size of the range of the instrument, and you have to look at the conductor. Mm-hmm. So you are going to play it by heart, right?
There will be portions I play from memory, but because everything what you said is completely true, you know, you have to juggle all those different variables. But now I even have one more, and that's that there's video. So I have to be aware of what the video is doing and practice with the video. So there are places in the music that I need the score in front of me, because you could lose track of where you are that way. But there are certain sections, more core sections that are soloistic, that I already have in my head, you know, that I've been working on that way. So it's got a lot of different facets to it.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.